Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, June 18, 2019. Lawmakers criticize traffic police for collecting money from motorists.
I was sitting in the passenger seat. When we stopped, my friend decided to open the window and was giving out 200. I told him, why are you giving 200? He said, this is what we do all the time.
And a border dispute is looming between South Sudan and Kenya.
The construction has started from the Kenya side and they are coming. They have not crossed Nadapal. And they are now deploying the troops into Nadapal. Should there be any resistance, they just come in by force.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudanese lawmakers are criticizing traffic police officers who harass drivers in Juba town. The lawmakers say some traffic police officers are, quote, a disgrace and shame to the country's image. The members of parliament made the remarks yesterday during a session in which they grilled Interior Minister Michael Chengjek and ordered him to address the matter. Wake Simon Wudu reports for VOA from Juba.
Interior Minister Michael Chengjek instructed police to shoot to kill any drivers in South Sudan who do not follow a traffic police officer's order to stop. Following that order last week, lawmakers summoned Minister Chengjek to appear before parliament and demanded to know who gave him the authority to direct police to shoot to kill. The lawmakers also asked Chengjek to explain why traffic police in Juba are routinely harassing and intimidating drivers and traders. MP Magong Gumnyul says traffic officers are exceeding their mandate of operations by stopping foreigners and other drivers for no apparent reason.
The police stop them and they harass for something small. One night I was driving with a friend. I gave my car to a friend. I was sitting in the passenger seat. When we stopped, my friend decided to open the window and was giving out 200. I told him, why are you giving 200? He said, this is what we do all the time.
The lawmakers accused some traffic police officers of simply stealing money and property from travelers along the streets of Juba. One lawmaker says some traffic police officers automatically assume that a driver who is brown in color and does not speak fluent Arabic or popular local languages is a foreigner and automatically thinks he can harass, mistreat, or intimidate the person. Lawmaker Anthony Jarvis Yak says he has experienced the police harassment because of his brown skin. He says it's sinful that the ones who are supposed to be protecting people are the ones breaking the law.
We have been all around in East and West Africa. If a traffic policeman stops you, first of all, he would start by saying good evening or good morning, sir or madam. How are you? Then he will start asking you for your credentials or the other papers you have. But now here, especially there, they do respect the foreigners. But here, I am a very living example of a foreigner.
Luka Monoja, another lawmaker, questions the criteria used by recruiting and training traffic police.
I'm asking this question because 50, 55 years ago, the minimum requirement for somebody to be a policeman was grade 8. And today, our street is full of young people, young girls who have got grade 12. And the police service in the region, whether you say Sudan or DRC or Ethiopia or Kenya, the minimum requirement is grade 12. So it is of interest to me, what is the profile of our police service in South Sudan? How do they go in training and what do they learn in training?
Chengjek denies issuing suit to kill orders to traffic police for drivers who do not obey orders to stop, saying the order was actually to shoot at the tires of drivers who refused to stop. Speaking in Arabic, Chenjek admitted some traffic officers were guilty of misconduct and insisted he is working to address those issues, adding that 37 police and military officers have been detained and interrogated for illegally collecting money on the streets.
If there is something that has gone wrong, we can fix together. I have noted all your concerns. The issue of the money, the allegations that you have been harassed, and the issue of women being mistreated at the airport. We don't have somebody who is above anybody. All of you and we, the executives, are equal, even the normal citizens.
The lawmakers called on Minister Chenjek to revoke his directive to suit the tires of vehicles in which drivers speed off when asked to stop and to reform the police and ensure they do not tarnish South Sudan's image. Interior Minister Michael Chenjek instructed police to suit. For VOA News, Amwaki Simon Wudu in Juba.
A lawmaker representing Kapoita State in the Transitional National Legislative Assembly is accusing Kenya of encroaching into South Sudanese territory near the Nadapal border. The lawmaker summoned Defense Minister Kwalma Nyang to the parliament to explain what steps the government is taking to protect South Sudanese territory. Winnie Chirino reports for VOA from Juba.
Lawmaker Epone Emmanuel Lolimo says the Kenyan government began encroaching on South Sudanese territory back in August of 2009 when the then Sudan government permitted Kenya to establish a temporary border control post at Nadapal to facilitate the movement of people and goods. Lolimo says members of local South Sudanese communities repeatedly raised concerns to local and state officials over the Kenyan government's encroachment onto their land, but says nothing much was ever done about it.
Since then, the local communities at the grassroots have been denied access to graze within their borders, and most of the time efforts have been engaged by the local authorities at the state to talk with the Kenya government to allow the community to graze as it was before. And usually they agree, but it doesn't take long.
Lolimo says the Kenyan government has grabbed six South Sudanese villages in Kapoita State, including Losolia, Logolei, Namelilia, and Lolei. And he says the Kenyan government launched a road repair project last month in Kaloboyei, Kenya, about 65 kilometers from the Nadapal border crossing point, ending at Nokodok, which takes Kenyan troops 12 kilometers inside South Sudanese territory.
The construction has started from the Kenya side and they are coming. They have not crossed Nadapal. And they are now deploying the troops into Nadapal. Should there be any resistance? They just come in by force. So this is an alarm because they have already started and they are coming. Nakodo is in South Sudan. It is right now occupied by the Toposa community.
Lolimo accuses the Kenyan government of supplying citizens in Turkana with arms and disguising them as the Kenyan police reserve, and says some Turkana residents use the guns to carry out cattle raids against the Toposa community on the South Sudanese side of the border.
We know Kenya government is a friendly country. They help us in the struggle, and we attend the comprehensive peace agreement through the efforts of the IGAD. But Kenya is also taking that advantage of us being in political crisis to acquire land. And Kenya so far has even and distorted the map. And if you see at the map, our area called Nadapal is 12 kilometers, and it is in the map of Kenya, reading Nakodo, Kenya.
Lolimo says Kenya started opening roads within South Sudan territory over the past few months and is preparing to put an airstrip in Nalupongor, Nosolia, and station troops at the Namerikinyang Lole Kauto border, which is part of South Sudan. Following a two-hour debate, National South Sudanese lawmakers passed a motion to summon local and state officials to appear in parliament to explain what they are doing to protect the country's territory.
Yes. Yes. So the motion is hereby. The motion is passed for the summoning of the Minister of Defense and Veteran Affairs, the Minister of Interior, the Minister of Foreign Affairs, and the governor of Kapoita said.
No specific date was set for the Ministers of Defense, Veteran Affairs, the Interior and Foreign Affairs to appear in Parliament. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serino in Juba.
Some leaders from five farming communities from Equatorial Region want President Salva Kiir to enforce his previous orders for pastoralists from neighboring areas to vacate the region. The leaders also demand compensation for lives lost, cattle, crops and property destroyed during the continuing conflict between farmers and pastoralists. Onen Walter Solomon has more for VOA from Juba.
Community leaders from Acholi, Bari, Boru, Lulubo, Madi and Kuku made the remarks during a two-day consultative meeting at the Juba Grand Hotel to discuss the repatriation of pastoralists from Equatoria to Jongolei. Traditional Chief Aliria William Maku, who is from Nimule, says 2 years ago, former Torit State Governor Tobiolo Alberio Romo held a meeting between farmers and pastoralists from various communities, after which Maku formed a committee made up of UN representatives, lawmakers, religious leaders, women and youth leaders to try to resolve the conflict. He says Romo passed a local decree which ordered pastoralists to leave, which was never implemented because the pastoralists were skeptical about the farmers' intentions.
When we talk driven of the cattle, all the moving cattle away from the farmer area, there is obsession, they pick. You want to chase us from your place. Then misconception of what the farmer said to them. Immediately they're pulling the gun. The owner of the garden said, please, why grazing cattle in my garden? The response, are we feeding on human being flex or we are feeding on cow flex? So that means the cattle keeper, they value their cattle more than the human.
Maku says some of the cattle herders crossed over the border of South Sudan into the three Ugandan districts of Amuru, Adjumani and Lamuo, souring relationships with those communities in Uganda.
I currently about 38 head of cattle driven from Anirapi sub-county in Adjumani district. Out now the 38 cattle are not found. Again in Andara Poma, about 15 head of cattle driven from there across Ato in the cattle camp. They have already organized forces. The complicated thing, weapons. Then if we ask ourselves, in this farm, where these people are getting the obscurity gun? Is it the gun, are they giving guns to people? Is it from heaven?
40-year-old Peter Teny, a representative for cattle keeper, comes from the Bor community of Jongolei State, says it is unfair to ask pastoralists to compensate farmers because he says both sides were affected by the ongoing conflict.
What is the really? To talk exactly the place for the conversation. Myself, I cannot accept. Our brothers are lying. The cattle are not destroyed, the farmers' crops. When the farmers see the cattle is coming, they are starting fire. So when the cattle see is firing by the farmers, they will revenge also. Even we complain about the life of our people, and we complain about a life of our cattle lost.
Atin denies farmers' allegations that the national government has supplied pastoralists with guns to protect their cattle. He claims that everybody in South Sudan has been acquiring guns since the struggle for independence with Sudan.
We buy our gun from our neighboring countries, like the North, like the rest who were at the time of the war, when the SPLA is fighting with Arab, like someone who wounded from the North, so and someone dead. So and his gun is down, you can get it to keep yourself.
The forum identified East Coast fever and lack of water points as the main factors forcing pastoralists from Bor to move to Equatorial Region, while others say it is because the farmers are peaceful and harmless. Bitface Abeh, a lawmaker representing Magui County in Torit State, says the pastoralists and farmers have agreed to implement the presidential order. She says this time around, the leaders should ensure that pastoralists are repatriated.
The task must be clear. The committee should visit all the cattle camps and even explain to them and prepare them in the process. Let it not take them as a shock. Secondly, a Ministry of Livestock should be informed to heighten disease surveillance work in the area where the cows are going, because you cannot also take back your cattle and they all die and you remain with nothing. It is also like a punishment. I think this involvement of traditional leaders and community leaders is very important, because it will also minimize on issues of abuses from both groups. It is the role of the government to provide security to all its citizens.
In the last presidential order issued on October 23, 2017, President Kiri instructed the Chief of Defense Forces to implement the evacuation of cattle camps from the area in liaison with the UNMISS commander, by providing assistance in terms of transport and security to the pastoralists returning to their respective states. For VOA News, I am Onan Walter Solomon in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, health officials react to the spread of Ebola from DRC to Uganda. Find out more when we come back after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is the greatest lesson you have learned from a relationship or marriage?
The greatest lesson I've learned is to accept others based on who they are and not based on what you want them to be.
Human beings are not perfect. They can hurt you sometimes, but then you also need to forgive.
I've learned not to give too much and not to trust at all. Because I gave too much, I gave myself fully and I never reaped anything out of it.
It's that of trust. It's that of trust, because without trust, there is no way you can thrive on with a relationship.
In marriage, I have learned one thing: to be patient.
I cannot trust a woman 100%. You know, that is relationship. And I think I cannot cheat on my woman because she is my woman. So that is my experience.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. It's time for our Tuesday health segment, and today we are talking about how the Ebola virus has spread from the Democratic Republic of Congo to Uganda. Last week, the virus crossed the DRC into Uganda. Since then, the virus has claimed two lives and also brought trade along the Uganda-DRC border to a standstill. Alima Athumani has the story for VOA from Kasese.
Businessman Penge Kiss has been importing fish for the last 15 years from Uganda to the Democratic Republic of Congo. But for the last week, Kiss says he has had little choice but to stay in Uganda because of the Ebola outbreak along the border.
Kinshasa to Juebo.
Kinshasa, we don't know Ebola, but when you get here at the border, wash hands, wash hands, wash hands. And when I got here, we've worked 3 days. In Congo, there is no business. They said there is Ebola, so we have to sit and wait, and even all the banks are closed. Motorcycle taxi driver Farouk Ayub says Ebola makes him afraid to cross into Congo. Normally, Congolese are the ones we transport mostly. We get them from Congo and take them to Uganda. But we are scared because of Ebola. So now we ask, we don't know how you can help advise us. How can we protect ourselves against Ebola? Ugandan businessman Rafael Masereka says he and his colleagues are warning people not to shake hands with merchants from the DRC. Ebola is spread through contact with body fluids. The Ugandan Red Cross is in charge of Ebola screening at all official entry points from the DRC. But Red Cross branch manager Natukunda Primrose says the danger is from those who cross the porous border where there is no screening.
So you don't know whether they've been in contact with a person who has Ebola, who has maybe attended a cultural function like burial, or maybe if through that process of trading, if they've managed to touch someone, a victim of Ebola.
Ugandan troops posted along the border have a mandate to check for illegal ammunition, but are not prepared to face, let alone fight Ebola. Benjamin Sensasi is the World Health Organization's Health Promotions and Communications Officer.
They'll be vaccinated if we get where they are. But the only challenge we have in that is the question of follow-up, which we're trying to work on, because once you're given the vaccine, we need to follow you up for some time to ensure that everything is working okay with you, don't have any problem.
The traders along the Uganda-DRC border can only hope the measures are enough to stop Ebola spread so life can return to business as usual. Halima Athmani for VOA News, Kasese, Uganda.
From Uganda, we move to Sudan, where the European Union is blaming Sudan's Transitional Military Council for killing more than 100 South Sudanese protesters outside military headquarters in Khartoum on June 3rd. The Council of the European Union released a statement condemning the attacks and saying the responsibility for the deaths lays with the TMC. The Europeans have also expressed their support for an African Union decision to suspend Sudan's membership until a power is handed over to civilian-led government formed in Sudan. Mungu Ugale is in Khartoum and has been following reactions of the Sudanese people to the EU statement.
The supporters of the military council, this might be a negative voice. They will regard this as an interference with the sovereignty or an interference with the internal issues of Sudan. But for pro-democracy protesters, this is an advantage. This is an additional voice to their call that they have been calling for civilians rule in Sudan. Is the European Union pulled out or maybe pulled out its tie with Sudan? Definitely it is going to affect Sudan. It is going to affect so many projects that is run here in Sudan by the European Union. EU has a lot of projects here, including water projects, including education. So if all this project is going to be suspended, definitely it is going to affect not only the government, but the beneficiaries or the communities where these projects are actually being implemented.
Diplomats from the United States were in Khartoum last week, and they made a strong statement that any unilateral decision will not be accepted, meaning if the military council decided to go alone without civilians, it will not be accepted. Or if the civilians want to go alone without the military, it will not be accepted. It looks like the international community is now having one voice on these issues in Sudan. Are Sudanese, apart from the protesters, are Sudanese also talking about the same issue?
All these voices altogether have a lot of impact within Sudan, especially within the last 1 week or 10 days. You remember during the visit of the Ethiopian Prime Minister to Sudan, that was the beginning of the pressure from the African Union, from the United States, and now this one from the European Union. All these voices and all this pressure, like on both sides, on the Transitional Military Council and as well as on the political opposition. There is no way they can reach to a settlement, political settlement in Sudan, unless the two sides sit together and negotiate on the table and try to sort out this issue amicably as soon as possible. All the voices are calling for the civilians' rule. So this is the key issue. And as I said earlier, this is an additional voice to the protesters, and an additional voice to the freedom and change coalition here in Sudan. And that is why lately they were putting some of the conditions, if fulfilled by the Transitional Military Council, this is where they will go back to the negotiation. So they feel supported. They feel supported by
this voice is
by the international community.
Yeah, these statements embolds the activists or the pro-democracy activists. Yesterday, they also announced that they are now changing their tactics from sitting in front of the military headquarters to demonstrating at night. Is that what is going to happen in Khartoum? When is it going to start? When are they going to start demonstrating at night?
This is something yet to be seen if they begin doing that in the neighborhoods and residential areas in Khartoum or even in the state. But yes, this is one of the calls being made by the Freedom and Change forces. They are calling on their supporters, you know, across the country to now begin night protest, and in a way that it can also, you know, push the military council to fulfill some of their conditions and also give them that pressure so that they are able to hand power finally to the civilians.
That's our reporter Mungu Ugali in Khartoum speaking with me on the latest developments in Sudan. The UN Refugee Agency reports an upsurge in intercommunal violence in northeastern Democratic Republic of Congo's Ituri province has forced more than 300,000 people this month to flee for their lives. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from UNHCR headquarters in Geneva.
The Hima and Lendu ethnic groups in Ituri province have been going to war with each other sporadically over land use since 1999. Inter-ethnic fighting between the two communities in late 2017 and early 2018 was marked by widespread displacement and abuse. Unfortunately, the situation of calm over the past year has broken down again with the recent flare-up of fighting. The UN Refugee Agency reports masses of people are fleeing attacks and counterattacks in three of Ituri province's five administrative territories. UNHCR spokesman Baba Balar says humanitarian agencies are unable to reach the victims in most of the affected areas.
UNHCR fears this escalation could engulf large parts of the province. We are gravely concerned for the safety of civilians after receiving reports of killings, kidnappings, maiming, and sexual violence being unleashed against people.
The epicenter of the Ebola epidemic in eastern DRC is in North Kivu province, but Ituri province also is affected. The World Health Organization reports the virus has infected more than 2,100 people and killed nearly 1,500. It says about 10% of these cases and deaths are in Ituri. WHO spokesman Tarek Jazarevich tells VOA the massive displacement in Ituri will certainly complicate efforts to contain Ebola.
The mobility of the population in North Kivu and Ituri is a risk factor. So every time you have people moving in high numbers, it's more complicated to do the work on follow-ups, contact tracing, follow-up on people who are supposed basically to be observed for on a daily basis for 21 days.
Ebola symptoms emerge between 2 and 21 days after a person becomes infected. It is crucial for an infected person to seek treatment immediately. The UN Refugee Agency reports the hundreds of thousands of newly displaced in Ituri are in urgent need of shelter, basic household items, and food. It says tens of thousands of people are sleeping in the open or in public buildings without any practical assistance. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Music.
That's our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with the song "Et Moi" by Fally Ipupa from the Democratic Republic of Congo. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Alida chamala mokile monanga zoba mokile monanga yuma pasia love
zoka
sufosa love moto ta kosipote
Olivier Kamazi
bozo monango blague mo bali bo mesana kané bien ye apoma na ye courant yo fleuve amazon. Caresse tendresse, cure à l'offre, mine le bitou ma cure à déception. Il peut pas banzer tenir ce commun paraître comme un déluge.
Bastien.